Well, please keep your Bibles open as we look at this passage. In the 2004 film, Edge of Tomorrow, we see Tom Cruise's character get killed off very early on in a battle against an invading alien army. But as he dies, he's covered in alien blood, and this alien blood bestows on him the ability to reset the previous 24 hours whenever he's killed. And what ensues is Tom Cruise living the same day over and over again. The caption for the movie is live, die, repeat. But it kind of feels a little bit like our life, does it not? You know, we get up in the morning, we go to work, we come home, we go to bed, then repeat. Every day. And my question for today is, how often do we ever stop and ask, what's the point of it all? So let me put it this way. Imagine I were to ask you to go into Martin Place tomorrow and stand right in the middle of Martin Place from 9 a.m. till 12 noon. No other information. Just go into Martin Place tomorrow and stand in the middle of Martin Place for 3 hours. Now, maybe one or two of you would do it. I mean, those with a healthy respect for their minister would follow that guidance. But the likelihood is you would probably ask why before committing, wouldn't you? And that's a perfectly fair and natural question to ask. If I'm going to ask for 3 hours of your Monday morning, not to mention travel time, okay, it's natural to ask why I would be asking such a thing of you. Now, here's the thing. We ask the why about 3 hours of our time, but how often do we ask the why of our whole life? And why are we here? What am I striving towards in life? Why should I get up each morning to pretty much do the exact same thing I did yesterday? How often do humans ever stop and ask, what is the point of it all? Well, that is what the book of Ecclesiastes is on about. So we're kicking off a new sermon series today, and across this term, we are going to be asking the big questions of life. Why are we here? What are we striving towards in life? And why should I get out of bed each morning? Now, Ecclesiastes is written by a person called the Teacher. He calls himself the Teacher in verse 1 there. In Hebrew, he's called Kohelet, or Kohelet in the Aussie accent. That's probably what I'm going to tend to call him. But in the LXX, now for those who know, the LXX is the Greek translation of the Old Testament, the teacher is called Ecclesiastes, hence the title of the book. And the word Ecclesiastes comes from the Greek word for church, which is ecclesia. So Ecclesiastes is the church leader. He's the leader of the church, the teacher of the church. Now, this has led some English translations to call him the preacher. You might read in different versions of the New Testament, of the Bible there. The problem with calling him the preacher, though, is that the preacher is supposed to give all the answers. And Kohelet doesn't. Kohelet's role is to get us to think. So he's more like a tutorial leader. All right, he leads a tutorial of people and he asks the kind of questions that will help us to figure out for ourselves what the point of life is. And in our passage today, he states up front the theme of this book. And the theme of this book is, there is no point to life. There is no point to life without God. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, way to bring us down, Kohelet, good start. But remember, his theme is designed to make us think, okay? Because the uninformed life is the simple life, isn't it? It's like living on instinct, like the animals. And what Kohelet wants is to save us from the simple life. And look, we've got 3 points today to sort of, these points are designed to start us on our journey across this term. We're going to begin, so you can see it on the inside of your new sheet there. We're going to begin by seeing how Kohelet's desire is to help us explore the meaninglessness of life without God. And so I've titled our first point, the teacher's purpose. And that's looking at verses 1 to 3. We'll then look at exactly why life is meaningless without God. And I've titled this the teacher's lesson, which is verses 4 to 11. But here's the thing. Since Qohelet does not give us all the answers, we have to actually jump out of Ecclesiastes and into the New Testament to find the solution to this meaninglessness of life. And so I've titled our third point, Jesus' purpose and lesson. But without further ado, let's dive in and ask, what is the point of it all? And the book of Ecclesiastes begins with these words. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Now, tradition has long held that the teacher is King Solomon. Kind of fits the description, all right? Solomon was the son of David. Solomon was king in Jerusalem, and Solomon was renowned for his enormous wisdom, his great wisdom. Yet scholars have more recently called this hypothesis into question. You see, while some of the descriptions of the teacher seem to fit the person of Solomon, so in particular the experiences that he outlines in the following chapter, other aspects of the teacher don't fit Solomon at all. So, for example, in chapter 4, Qohelet laments the injustice found in Israel, but doesn't lift a finger to do anything about it. Right? You would think the king would have the power to stamp out injustice and corruption. So what most scholars think today is that Ecclesiastes was written by a sage, by a wise man, many years after Solomon, but he wrote under the mantle of Solomon to sort of get his message across. Now, look, there's zero consensus in the scholarly world, in commentators about this, so it's unlikely that you and I are going to figure it out this term. But what we do know is that the book of Ecclesiastes was part of Jesus' Bible. And so we therefore need to heed its message. And its message is summarized very succinctly in verse 2. Have a read with me. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Now the word translated meaningless there is the Hebrew word hevel. And that can be sometimes translated as vanity or vapor or ephemeral, like very brief. I think the best way I've ever heard Hevel described is like when you walk outside on a cold morning and you breathe out, right? What do you see? You see your breath as a vapor that lasts all of 2 seconds. And if you try and grab that vapor, there's nothing there to grab. All right, so that's what Hevel means. It refers to something that has no substance, no meaning. And the NIV kind of obscures for us just how meaningless this thing that Qohelet is talking about actually is. So the ESV translates it a little more accurately with the phrase, vanity of vanities. So where the NIV says meaningless, meaningless, the ESV says vanity of vanities. So just like Song of Songs is like the greatest song ever written, and King of Kings is the greatest king who ever lived, vanity of vanities is referring to the most meaningless, fleeting puff of mist that ever existed. And so what is it exactly that has so little meaning, so little value? Well, we see it in verse 3. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? So the thing that is meaningless, meaningless, according to Qohelet, is life under the sun. Now, this phrase, under the sun, is going to be repeated 25 times throughout the book because Qohelet's main objective is to show his readers that life without God is utterly meaningless. All right, so the phrase under the sun refers to the fact that there is nothing above the sun. Right, there's no God out there. And so the message of Ecclesiastes is a message for people living in a society that has been heavily influenced by atheism. Right, that's what scholars think was going on in Qohelet's time. Atheism was on the rise. And so he writes this book to ask people of his time, have you really thought this one through? Have you really thought this through? Now, he mentions God periodically throughout the book. He swaps back and forth between the atheist view and the theist view, the believer's view. But his message is to ask the question, have you really thought this whole atheist way of life through properly? And friends, this is what makes the book of Ecclesiastes so relevant for today. Right? Even though over 85% of the world's population still believe in some form of higher power, atheism has had a disproportionately large influence on Western society. And it's done so primarily by telling us there's no meaning in life. You're right, given the universe is one big cosmic accident, okay, there can be no meaning to life. Like an accident, by very definition, has no meaning. You know, if you ever see someone that has a car crash, right, and you go up to them and you say, well, what did you do that for? What are they going to say? Well, I didn't mean it. Right? There's no meaning to accidents. And this is the thing. Stripping life of all meaning has two devastating consequences for Western society. So the first is that life without meaning is the most miserable existence there is. Right? If my origins are from nothing and my destination is nothing, then today means nothing as well. So why should I even get out of bed? Now, we can't pin the increasing rates of anxiety, depression, and suicide solely on atheism's impact on Western society, but it has had an effect. It has had an effect. The second consequence for saying there is no meaning in life is that the human soul was not actually designed to live a meaningless life. And so what we do as humans is we tend to look for meaning in other ways, in worldly pursuits. And the teacher says, I want you to think about this, right? Don't just blindly accept what society tells you life is about. We need to think about it. He wants to get us to think. And in verses 4 to 11, he gives us a lesson on where meaning is not found in life. So if you recall from verse 3, he asked, what do people gain from all their labour? Now that word gain, it just means profit. What do people accomplish? What do people achieve? What do people produce? What do people have to show for all their hard work under the sun? And the answer is vapor, mist. That's it, right? So what he says in verses 4 to 11, let's have a look. He says, wherever society tells you to look for meaning in this life under the sun, you will find nothing more than a breath on a cold morning. All right, so he starts with the humanist approach to life. So, you know, humanism, the humanist says, the reason I get out of bed in the morning is to make the world a better place for my fellow humans. When all is said and done, if humans are better off because of my toil today, then my life has meaning. And Coelet says, how exactly is your insignificant little life going to make anything better? Nothing has ever changed. All right, so have it read verses 5 to 7 with me. The sun rises and the sun sets and then hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again, presumably through evaporation and rain. You see, what verses 5 to 7 are getting at is, do you think your efforts are going to change anything in this world? The sun has been rising and setting, and the wind has been blowing to and fro, and the streams have been flowing into the sea for millennia. Right? At absolute best, your greatest contributions to this world are completely insignificant. You can change nothing. So, if humanism isn't the approach, how about hedonism? That's where he goes for next. Now, by hedonism, he doesn't mean drunken parties, all right? He's not interested in sort of the crass hedonism. He's talking more about materialism, okay? So the materialist says, the reason I get out of bed in the morning is so that I can go to work and afford to buy nice things, things that will make my life enjoyable. Yet Coelet slams the book on this approach as well. Have a look at verse 8. All things are wearisome. More than one can say, the eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. All right, no matter how much we save, no matter how many products we buy, no matter how many experiences we have, no matter how many parties we go to, there's always more to be had and more to be had. All right, materialism or hedonism are wearisome in the end. We gain nothing. Well, what's next? Next, he looks at the accomplisher. Now, by accomplisher, I mean the kind of person who says, the reason I get out of bed in the morning is to do something new, to come up with some sort of new amazing invention or new amazing adventure that no one has seen before. And Coelet puts this one to bed as well. Have a look at verse 9 and 10. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, there's something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. What he's saying is even the most amazing things that humanity have ever done, the most amazing things humanity has ever accomplished, are simply more of the same. Right? So take putting a man in space or putting a man on the moon. In one sense, it's an amazing new thing, but in another sense, it's just breaking another frontier. And humanity has been breaking frontiers ever since Adam and Eve stepped out of the garden. Or take the internet and technology. These amazing new ways to communicate, but in the end, it's just another version of the printing press or a pen and paper. But there is nothing new under the sun. Finally, he looks at the immortalizer. What do I mean by the immortalizer? Someone that wants to be immortal. The reason I get out of bed of a morning is to do something I will be remembered for. I want to be honored and remembered. And Coelet says in verse 11, no one remembers the former generations. Even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. So what does he mean? Well, let me put it this way. One of the top three greatest most important accomplishments of the last 100 years was the vaccine for polio. Right? Polio was one of the most debilitating diseases, and it could strike anyone. It's probably one of the greatest things that have ever happened in the last 100 years. Now, hands up, who knows the name of the person who created the vaccine for polio? We've got one person, two people. Who is it, Denise? Jonas Salk. I had to look it up. All right, I didn't know who it was. Jonas Salk, Dr. Jonas Salk in 1952, and then Dr. Albert Sabin developed an oral vaccine in 61. Now, that is 70 years ago. And he's forgotten by everyone, except David and Denise. And they're not that old. They're not that old. Now, the teacher's lesson here is, if we try to find meaning in anything in life under the sun, anything life under the sun offers, anything the atheistic viewpoint offers us, all we'll be left with at the end of it is a handful of mist. Right? Life under the sun, life with no God, is the most soul-crushing experience there is. So what do? All right, if Western society's absolute best options for fulfillment and happiness and meaning produce nothing more than a soul-crushing mist, all right, where do we go to find meaning? Well, like I said at the beginning, Coelet is not a preacher. He does not give us all the answers. And so we need to actually look outside of the book of Ecclesiastes to find real gain, real profit in life. And when we come to the New Testament, we find that Jesus tells us where real gain is found. I want to read to you just one verse. This is from John chapter 15. So John chapter 15 is quite a famous passage. It's talking about the vine. And in John chapter 15, verse 5, Jesus says this, "I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing." Now that last clause there echoes Ecclesiastes chapter 1, doesn't it? Apart from me, you can do nothing. What does man gain by all the labor at which he toils under the sun? Nothing. We gain nothing as though if we're living as though there is no God. But if our toil is in Jesus, we bear much fruit. We get much gain, much profit. But how is this the case? Well, John actually told us right back at the beginning of John's Gospel. Do you remember how John's Gospel starts? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now, in the Greek, the literal translation is, in the beginning was the Logos. And the word Logos is actually a philosophical principle about where the source or the meaning of life comes from. And for centuries leading up to Jesus, philosophers had argued over what was the logos of life, the meaning of life. So was the logos honouring your family? That's what Confucianism says. All right, meaning of life is coming from bringing honour to your family. Was the logos pleasures? All right, so the Romans would pursue earthly pleasures as their logos. Was the logos understanding life itself? That was what the Greeks were about, all about philosophy. That's where life is found and meaning is found. Or was it just making the world a better place, like the humanists tell us? All right? Then along comes John, and he says, no. The logos is not a principle, a truth given by people. The logos is a person. It is God come to earth. The Logos became flesh and dwelt among us. And what John and the rest of the New Testament writers tell us is that if we align ourselves with this person, we find a reason for living. Right? Instead of everything being meaningless, ephemeral, a mist that lasts all of 2 seconds, everything now has meaning. And the reason everything has meaning is for two reasons. Number one, our life reflects the nature of God in this world, and it points to the next world. So let me explain what I mean. I'll give you some examples. So take the environment, for example. If we look after the environment because we want to make this world a better place for humanity, our net gain in our life will be a soul-crushing mist. Deb told me recently that more and more climatologists are suffering from a disproportionate level of depression. Why? It's because half the world aren't listening to them, and the other half of the world are making zero difference. I mean, for every plastic bottle we recycle, it feels like two make it into the ocean. But if we look after the environment because that's what God put us here to do, then we find meaning in life. Right? Our love for the environment reflects God's love for it. I'll give you another one. If we go to work to be able to afford nice things, our net profit in life will be an unsatisfying vapor. Right? Whatever we buy will either wear out by next year or be superseded by next year's model. But if we go to work because that's what we were put here by God to do, to till the earth, then we find meaning. And the reason we find meaning is because our work reflects God's work. All right? In John 5:17, Jesus says, "The Father is always at work." We're doing the same thing that God is doing. I'll give you another one. If we have children, you know, procreate and have kids because society tells us that this little bunch of molecules will bring you joy in life and you'll have someone to choose your nursing home, I mean look after you when you're in your old age, your overall achievement in life will be a heartbreaking ephemeral, heartbreakingly ephemeral, because that little bunch of molecules is going to one day die and rot and be remembered no more. But if we have children, because each child is made in the image of God and has an immortal soul, and if that child aligns itself with Jesus, then one day, billions of years from now, that child will be laughing and rejoicing at the wonder and glory of God. Brings meaning. Or finally, if we talk to people about Jesus because, well, it's the right thing to do and I've been told to do it, then our net gain will be exhaustion and cynicism. Because there's nothing we can actually do to convert someone. But if we talk to people about Jesus as a reflection of the love Jesus has shown us, then our life and our evangelism suddenly has meaning. Our evangelism is reflecting God's love and evangelism of us. But even better than that is that one day, billions of years from now, you could be sitting around the throne of God chatting to that person about the conversation you had in this life. Friends, we live in a time not too dissimilar to that of Colette. The people of God back then had been heavily influenced by atheism, thinking that life under the sun was all there was. What Colette wants is for us to think that through. Right, because if we look to anything other than God to provide meaning to our life, we will be left with nothing but a net gain of a handful of mist. But if we align ourselves with Jesus, the Logos of life, then everything we do suddenly has meaning in life. Not just this one, but the next as well.